and watch them come running, 'cause they're suckers for all of the criminal shame-worthy things that you do. Because they're suckers for you.
I'm glad that the president said what he said.
They've all been blinded. They think it's fine that you take climate change lightly. And they don't mind it. And that you have phone sex with Sean Hannity nightly. They love your racist, sexist chants, your monosyllabic rants. If you can't keep it in your pants, it's no big deal. You validate their hate and fears, and it's music to their white ears. And then they say,
hey, he's just being real.
'Cause they're suckers for you. When you say stupid things, they rush to explain them. 'Cause they're suckers for you. Yeah, they should just shut up and go back where they came from.
At Co, New Jersey.
And all the subliminal race baiting bullshit you do. So they're suckers for you.
And as we look ahead to 2020, I'm joined now by a very special guest, Senator Lindsey Graham, circa 2015. LG, what's your take on Donald Trump and the rhetoric he uses to rile his base?
The way he is conducting himself is contrary to the values I hold as a Republican, and I think most of us accept as a nation. And I will not be part of this.
Uh-huh. And if you'll excuse me, Senator, I'd now like to welcome a very special guest, Senator from South Carolina and Patti LuPone enthusiast, present-day Lindsey Graham.
Thank you.
Lindsey, what is your take on Donald Trump's racist rhetoric?
I think the president did a fabulous job of talking about this problem. He did it in a smart way, in a compassionate way. Mr. President, you're the right guy at the right time. You can do it. Nobody else has been able to do it, and I want to help you.
So awkward.
They love your incoherent tweets, the hamburgers that you eat. They worship down at your feet like sewer rats. You could kick puppies till they cried, or make Kim Jong on your bride, and they'd all still rock their MAGA hats. 'Cause they're suckers for you. And all the empty broken promises you made, they're just suckers for you. You got them thirsty and they're drinking your Kool-Aid. Girl, they're suckers for all the despicable things that you're putting us through. Us through, us through.
Fuck you.
And they love how you stick up for bros, call me criminal fools.
Oh, like you. 'Cause they're suckers for you.
It's a terrible thing that's taking place.
They're all suckers for you. Yeah, they're suckers for you.
And I'll win again.
Calm down.
He's a racist whose brain is mostly oatmeal and his mouth is attached to Fox News like some kind of human centipede. He's a wannabe authoritarian who craves the adoration of crowds, and that's why he opened his rally in North Carolina last night by telling the crowd he would be there all night because he had nothing else to do.
Historians are already calling it his "I wish this was all just a bad dream" speech.
We have all night. We can have a lot of fun tonight. I have nothing to do. Nothing.
I said, no. I don't have time to go with three different names. We'll call it Cortez. Too much time. Takes too much time.
It takes too much time to say three names. Time I could be spending with my dear friends, Mohammed bin Salman, Kim Jong-un, and KFC.
There's another crucial election in North Carolina's ninth. You know what, right? You know what we're talking about? I lost all my friends. They've tightened up. They've choked. You know what that is? They've choked. They can't breathe. Because people have such respect for the office of the presidency. They have respect for the office of the president.
My friends are all cowardly, suck-up choke artists. And I have no idea why they don't talk to me anymore.
Then Trump talked about the most important issue facing our country, his old reality show.
And whenever I hear that word, apprentice, I say, I love that word. That was a good show. They figured, you know what we'll do? We'll get Arnold Schwarzenegger to take my place. That didn't work out too well. That didn't work out too well. We had 14 seasons. Think of that. The Apprentice. I proudly signed 4 bipartisan human trafficking laws.
What?
Wow. Some episode.
Well, I gotta say, the 14th season of The Apprentice sounds incredible.
Gary Busey, your challenge is open a lemonade stand. Meatloaf, your challenge is end the global slave trade.
You know, we talked a lot about how Donald Trump is a racist, but there's plenty of other news out there, like how Donald Trump has always been a racist.
I don't like the way my landlord's treating me. I don't like the way Mr. Trump is treating me. I don't like the way that my landlord's treating me. I'm jumping out of the lockup if I do. What do I want to do about it?
You see, back in 2005, Donald Trump proposed a season of The Apprentice that would pit an all-black team against an all-white team. Trump really believed in this idea, as he told Howard Stern at the time.
It would be nine blacks against nine whites, all highly educated, very smart, strong, beautiful people.
Beautiful people. Now, it gets worse. When Stern asked about the details, Trump affirmed that while there would be a mix of light-skinned and dark-skinned black contestants, the white team would consist solely of people with blonde hair. Are you kidding me? He was planning a race war-themed reality show and somehow made it more offensive? Why not go even further?
All the white contestants have to be blonde, right-handed, Methodist, O-positive, Libras, and I cannot stress this enough, not Italian.
Now, it didn't happen because producer Mark Burnett's not going to racially segregate contestants on The Apprentice in 2005. Come on. He saved that for Survivor in 2006.
I have a suggestion for the hate-filled extremists who are constantly trying to tear our country down.
Come to my rally. You'll fit right in.
Then he went on about the congresswoman.
They never have anything good to say. That's why I say, hey, if they don't like it, let them leave. Let them leave. If they don't love it, tell them to leave it.
This is when Trump is in his element. He gives his base the performance they want. And that's what he did again last night when he whipped them into a racist frenzy by slandering Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, a Somali refugee and naturalized citizen. Trump has been attacking her all week with racist lies, and the crowd responded with a truly horrific chant while Trump just stood by.
She looks down with contempt on the hardworking American, saying that ignorance is pervasive in many parts of this country. And obviously and importantly, Omar has a history of launching vicious anti-Semitic screeds.
Democracy stunk. Liberty stunk. Free Sprechen stunk.
I never thought I'd say this, but these rallies were a nationalist leader whips people up into a racist frenzy might have a dark side.
This is one of the most vile spectacles in modern political history, a defining moment for our country, and any Republican who doesn't immediately condemn it should imagine how it will look in a history textbook years from now, because there will absolutely be a section on this, and it will absolutely name everyone complicit in it. Despite the fact that Trump spent the rally in the preceding 3 days spreading racist lies and telling Omar and three other congresswomen to go back to their countries, he actually tried to claim in the Oval Office today that he didn't like the chant and tried to stop it, which is, again, an obvious lie.
When your supporters last night were chanting, send her back, why didn't you stop them? Why didn't you ask them to stop saying that?
Well, number one, I think I did. I started speaking very quickly. It really was a loud... I disagree with it, by the way. But it was quite a chant. And I felt a little bit badly about it. But I will say this, I did, and I started speaking very quickly.
No, 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 you didn't. When they started chanting, you just let them go. You said nothing.
Send her back.
So you'll tell your supporters never to say that again?
Well, I would say that. I was not happy with it. I disagree with it. But again, I didn't say that. They did.
Wow. Wow, Trump supporters, did you see him throw you under the bus? Probably not, since you have a tire on your face right now. And wait a second, Trump, you disagree with it? Hey, mister, this is your party. You're the bride at the White Power wedding, and you sent out some lovely engraved invitation. Please join me on the dark side. Pick one, chicken, fish, or race war. And for Pete's sake, if you're going to be a demagogue, at least grow a pair and take responsibility for what you inspired them to chant, Wussolini. Okay? You created that crowd. You're like Dr. Frankenstein saying, I didn't strangle those villagers. It was my monster. All I did was sew together some dead bodies, zap it with lightning, deny it love, set it loose, and mention that I knew some people who could use a good strangling.
Hey, girls.
Yes?
What is it?
What's up, Amber?
I love America, but I don't like detention centers.
Me either. They're inhumane.
A living nightmare. Saying I don't like them is me exercising my free speech. But sometimes, when you use that free speech to express an opinion people don't like, they respond with racism.
Been there.
Happens all the time. And when I went on Twitter and tweeted, close the detention centers, do you know what someone replied?
A well-thought-out statement that respectfully reflected their opinion?
Nope. They sang the same old song we've heard 1,000 times before.
Go back to your country. Nobody's stopping ya. Go back to your country.
Go back to Africa. And that was confusing because I'm not from Africa, and Africa is not a country. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska, the literal opposite of Africa.
Uh-huh. Once I tweeted that I thought getting rid of all college debt was a good idea.
It's a great idea. It is, even though I never went to college and don't care.
And you know how someone replied?
With a question about how paying for the educations of millions would affect our economy?
Nope. They replied,
go back to your country. I'm afraid of things that I don't know.
Go back to Mexico. I replied, hey, that's racist. Plus, I'm Cuban. And they replied, actually calling me racist is racist, when we all know that's
not a thing.
Well, you know what happened to me?
What?
I was minding my own business, just speaking another language, and someone yelled,
go back to your country. You're stupid, you're ugly, you're dumb. Go back to your country, wherever it is you're from.
But you weren't born here, right?
I wasn't, but I'm a United States citizen, so this is my country.
Cool.
You know who else wasn't born here? The ancestors of everyone giving us a hard time. That's uncomfortably true.
Well, one time I was at a party talking about systemic racism, and you know what? Someone said if I don't like it, I should leave. So you know what I said to them? Eat my... You think this country is perfect? People in cages, uninsured Americans in crippling debt, and we brought measles back! Look, I love this country, but I think we can do better. So get the up out of my face with that noise, you raggedy bastard.
I hear ya. You can't be gracious every time. A person gets worn down.
course, Trump is still dealing with the fallout from his racist tweets, which became a racist chant, which will soon be a racist breakfast cereal. He was asked why he wouldn't let the story go.
Why are you escalating your feud with the four congresswomen and racial questions?
Well, I think they're very bad for our country. I really think they must hate our country. Nobody knows how to handle them. I feel they're easy to handle.
What do you mean they're easy to handle? This has been a public relations nightmare for you for the last 8 days. Nobody knows how to handle a bucking bronco. But for me, it's easy to handle. I let it knock me to the ground and then trample me until it gets tired, okay? Yeehaw. Yeehaw. Shebang. You're very nice. Shebang. Trump's been all over the map for the past week. Mm-hmm. Wednesday, he whipped his rally crowd into a froth over Representative Ilhan Omar, so they chanted, "Send her back." On Thursday, Trump said he didn't agree with the chant. On Friday, he said the chanted crowd were incredible patriots. Then he tweeted a video from his rally adding, "As you can see, I did nothing to lead people on, nor was I particularly happy with their chant. It's not my fault. All I did was sing, 'Sweet Caroline.'" And the crowd sang, "Send her back."
I want to talk about this new phrase of his he's been saying, America, love it or leave it. Okay, so according to the Bill of Rights, a document the president reads about as closely as everyone else reads the Apple terms and conditions, an American citizen has the right to feel and say anything he or she wants about the country. And if you do love America, you want it to be as great as it could possibly be. Does that mean you have to love every single thing about it? Obviously not, because if that was true, all these people screaming love or leave it would have left when Obama was the president. Or when the Supreme Court ruled in favor of gay marriage. Or for that matter, when they made a lady Ghostbusters, they would all got on their Nina Pintas and Santa Maria's. But to love America means to love what the country stands for. It means you respect the right to free speech, even if the speech differs from yours.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes, men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate. The unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery. Fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke, it is written, the kingdom of God is within man. Not one man, nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power. The power to create machines. The power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful. To make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world. A decent world. that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason, a world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
Twice he's sworn and cheered with my friends. What a big win, but I'm not really sure no more. No, I'm not really sure.
And he can play ball, come on.
That First Lady Riga, was she lucky, were we? But I'm not really sure now. No, I'm not really sure. I don't fear, cause I know we're the cure. That I am sure. I am sure. So wake from your slumber. 45 will put asunder. Didn't you hear the dance of thunder? I am sure. Wake from your slumber. 45 will put asunder. Can't you hear the dance of thunder? I am sure. Oh, 45, a real nosedive for American lives. Cause he's not really sure. Oh,
y'all
no.
Really don't like this man.
No, he's not really sure. So transfixed, he's dumb as bricks. A magic show with no tricks. Of the spell, he's unsure. Oh no, no, don't applaud. He's not sure. I don't fear, cause I know we're the cure. That I am sure.
I wish we could bring back Obama, Michelle, Malia, Sasha, all of them lost them. Now we're stuck with this imposter. Why can't we just toss them like we did 1773 with the T and the C up in Boston? Brown folks still under siege, women still underpaid, LGBTQ still underbooed, and this dude known to grab them by the coot still under investigation. No need for saving face, we are out saving grace. Say your last prayers, red cap wearers, make America great again, never, Wakanda forever.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
My hair is dirty blonde now, and
and there are even little sea sand pieces in there, probably. I wish there were none. Smelling dish soap and honey across the room. I'll stay hiding across the wild thousands. You stay on those roads that fit winter rust trucks, single file. Sleep early, wake early. Folding in neatly, always that this is my life feeling, and I shut off all the lights myself. In charge of every light. I have a few plants, but I have rescued exactly none. None such connection to that deep magic. With these hands now as I know them, a new scar and wow, tons of plants. Plant-induced psychosis. Keep me close, I'm good and visible. Sitting in loss like a beanbag chair. If I lose my eyes, I burn them over the blow. Frozen in the stream to see the flood.
That was 2019 local music from Florist, new song called Celebration from Up on the Mountaintop.
Representative Antonio Delgado held his 15th town hall meeting in Catskill on July 22nd at the Subversive Brewery on Main Street and answered questions from the audience.
My question, you mentioned going down to the border, and this question that concerns the border concerns miles from the border as we are, and we have neighbors in our community who are scared to go to work because they're scared that neighbors are going to be home and get snatched up by ICE, whether by mistake or on purpose, and that I feel their terror, and it makes me sick.
Sorry.
What can
can we do about that 100-mile area of activity?
Well, I mean, that's a tough question because a lot of this is about making sure that we implement policies that address that specifically. In order to implement policies that address that specifically, we need to have some sort of bipartisan cooperative approach and not frame this conversation in a way that is grounded in divisive rhetoric. And currently we're not in that space to get there. Listen, I have said from day one, I think we need to reform ICE. You know, I think it's important that we take some of the responsibilities that it has been given and reorganize the way it implements the stuff. We have currently an occupant in the White House who is employing ICE in a way that is deeply problematic. And it is creating an intense level of fear and paranoia in this country and here at home. And so our ability to actually address some of these specific policy mechanisms, whether it's metering at the halfway point as a sign to seek, you know, refuge in our country, or whether it's trying to rethink or redefine, you know, the purview with which ICE can operate beyond, because actually it's the Customs and Border Patrol that deals with, you know, within that 100 miles, right? And then beyond that is when ICE, you know, has a role to play. So the question really is, what are we doing about implementing a way to rethink the way that ICE marshals its resources? People don't fully understand, I don't think, I had to learn this myself, that there are different departments within ICE. Right, there's the Homeland Investigative Unit within ICE, which is responsible for looking after criminal organizations and terrorist organizations that are doing sex trafficking and human trafficking and drug smuggling, really bad stuff that is also housed within ICE. And then there's obviously the enforcement mechanism of ICE. And then there's the deportation mechanism. So how we think through ways to re-manage or reorganize this is critically important. But to be candid with you, the real issue here that's going to make this problematic is talking this through with the Senate and ultimately with the White House to get to a point where we can find some common ground. But some folks, and I hate to say this, but it seems like some folks like this conflict and they'd rather have this sense of unease rather than try to just figure out how to solve the problem in a thoughtful and a pragmatic way.
Tal Nacional come to the Half Moon in Hudson on August 6th. Here is their song, Zoi Zoi. Bye.
Hi, I'm Shesha Mizan from Hudson. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Jazzies of Kinderhook, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Palante, Puerto Rico. Palante. I am Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast.
Con desprendimiento.
With sadness, I am announcing that I will be resigning from the position of governor effective on Friday, August 2nd, 2019, at 5 in the afternoon.
Just before midnight on Wednesday, Puerto Rico's governor, Ricardo Rosselló, announced in a pre-recorded video message he would resign effective Friday, August 2nd. This capped close to 2 weeks of nonstop protests. And old San Juan cries of Ricky Renuncia had been ringing out alongside the traditional refrain, Palante. The first was a demand for the embattled Rosselló to resign, while the latter means onward, forward. The Caribbean island is at a historic crossroads. Hundreds of thousands have been marching and protesting daily, following the July 13th release by Puerto Rico's Center for Investigative Journalism of close to 900 pages, including shocking text messages between Rosselló, staffers, and advisors. The group chat message from late 2018 through January 2019 are riddled with misogyny, homophobia, profanity, and violence. The leaks and accompanying articles by CPI sent shockwaves through the Puerto Rican government and drove Puerto Ricans from all walks of life into the streets demanding change. This is the story of the people and the power of an independent media. The texts, mostly in Spanish, included jokes about the death toll of Hurricane Maria. Rosselló referred to Melissa Mark Viverito, the first Puerto Rican New York City Council speaker, as a puta, a whore. He also wrote, "You would be doing me a big favor," when another described salivating to shoot San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz. She announced in March her plans to run against Rosselló as governor in 2020. Legendary pop star Ricky Martin was also the target of crude, homophobic comments. The text surfaced as Puerto Rico struggles through an immense debt crisis and debilitating austerity under the bankruptcy-like process imposed by the federal PROMESA law. Enacted 3 years ago, PROMESA created the Financial Oversight and Management Board, an unelected body with sweeping powers to overrule Puerto Rican democratic control at any level. On July 11th, just 2 days before WikiLeaks broke, federal authorities arrested two top Rosselló administration officials and others in what the Justice Department described as an extensive multi-million-dollar fraud scheme related to government contracts. Puerto Ricans have long suffered as a result of their island's colonial status, both at home and in the diaspora across the United States. 50 years ago this week, a chapter of the revolutionary Puerto Rican group, the Young Lords, formed in New York City to confront the injustices experienced by impoverished inner-city Latinos. Juan Gonzalez, journalist and Democracy Now! NewsHour co-host, co-founded the Young Lords New York chapter. Born in Puerto Rico himself, but raised in New York, he described the group's history.
The conditions in the ghettos of East Harlem and the South Bronx and Central Brooklyn was what got us going. And I think and the fact that we constantly dealt with the direct issues confronting the community on a daily basis, whether it was garbage or health care or the lack of teaching of Puerto Rican and African-American histories in the schools.
The Young Lords barricaded streets until the city agreed to increase sanitation services. They took over a church to provide morning breakfast and childcare for those who needed it. They hijacked a mobile health clinic van to provide medical care to underserved areas. Like most radical groups of that era, they also faced serious repression by the police and the FBI. Over the last few weeks, as pressure mounted on Governor Rossejo to resign, Juan Gonzalez noted the significance of this moment.
Puerto Rico has a long history. It's 500 years of governance in Puerto Rico. During that period of time of 500 years, there have been 286 governors of the island of Puerto Rico. Most of them, about 147, were under Spanish rule. And then there was a period of direct American control of the island when the president appointed about 27 governors. And it's only been in the past 60 years or so that there's actually been elected governors by the people themselves. And there have only been 12 elected governors of Puerto Rico since the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico was created. It'll be actually 67 years ago tomorrow. July 25th is the anniversary of the founding of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. So in all those 286 governors, never has a governor been forced to resign by a popular protest.
But Juan Gonzalez also warned,
history is replete with examples of popular uprisings that got rid of a corrupt or dictatorial government, but the people ended up with worse situations. Can we forget Tahrir Square in 2011 and the overthrow of Mubarak after several weeks of protest by the people? Or go back a little further to the Philippines in 1986 and the overthrow of Marcos by popular protests. Or even further back to 1979 and Iran and the overthrow of the Shah. In each of those cases, people thought their country was going to change dramatically and ended up, in some cases, in worse situations than before. So there's going to be a real test now among the leaders and the activists of Puerto Rico. Can they unite? Can they come up with a political force and leadership that is really accountable to the Puerto Rican people? And that's going to be the big test in the future.
Given that Puerto Rico's Secretary of State recently resigned, the next in line to replace Governor Rossejo is Wanda Vasquez, the island's Secretary of Justice. As one of Rossejo's appointees, calls for her immediate resignation are already flooding social media. Music has infused the protests. Among the musicians in the streets were Ricky Martin and members of the globally renowned Grammy-winning Puerto Rican band Calle 13. Band members Ile, her brother Rene, known as Residente, and reggaeton musician Bad Bunny released a song last week called Sharpening the Knives. It quickly became the anthem of the movement. Speaking on Democracy Now! On Tuesday, one day after more than 500,000 people marched in San Juan, Ile described what the protests meant to her.
I think I've been waiting all my life for a moment like this.
Palante. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 40% chance of isolated showers or scattered thunderstorms on Saturday. Otherwise, it'll be sunny with a high of 81 and a low around 64. Sunday, there's a 30% chance of showers or thunderstorms, mainly after 5 p.m. Mostly sunny during the day with a high of 83 and a low around 66 Sunday night. Monday, there's a 40% chance of rain with a high of 83 and a low around 66. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Grabbable, handleable, listener-fueled radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
But first, we're going to talk about an important issue that just came up last week as Columbia Memorial Hospital announced they're doing away with birthing there and sending everyone to Albany to have babies for deliveries. And so we've got Nancy Rosenzweig. Did I mess it up?
You're okay.
From Catskill to talk about it. You used to work for Columbia Memorial. You've worked for
Northern Duchess Hospital.
And you can tell us a little bit about this decision. What did you think of the decision when you heard about it?
I wasn't shocked, given that
the number of births at Columbia Memorial Health have decreased considerably over the past 10 years. I think they're I think it's down to close to 300 a year. And the insurance companies over the past 10 years are paying less and less for every birth. So it's almost impossible to earn any money as an obstetrical provider, as a midwife or doctor, because the reimbursement's so low and the numbers are low.
So why is that? Why do the insurance companies not pay enough for deliveries? Or?
They have gone from paying anywhere in the range of $10,000 for care over a 9-month period that's all prenatal care, being on call, doing a birth, caring for a woman postpartum for at least 6 weeks afterwards. And they've gone from paying about an average of $10,000 per person down to about $2,000 per person. So if you look at just the finances of trying to have a practice where in this area, many, many of the women are in a Medicaid-type program, the providers are earning close to nothing for giving all that care. And then you have to pay providers to be on call 24 hours a day. So financially, it's a losing proposition, without a question. But most hospitals think of birth services as the door through which people enter the hospital for other services. So, for example, if a hospital has a great hip replacement department or, you know, pediatric care or some other kind of specialty care, if somebody has a really good experience with their birth, they tend to go back to that same place for all their other medical care. So even though birth isn't thought of as a great way to make money, if you have enough births, you can survive and bring people in. So right now, Columbia Memorial Health is trying a different type of strategy, I guess, which is to keep the prenatal care services in Catskill and Hudson, but not have to pay for all the obstetrical care that runs a labor and delivery unit and send people. They want people to go to Albany for their care. There are wonderful birth services in Kingston and Rhinebeck as well, and Troy. So obviously people will have a choice of where they can go and what they're going to do. But there are a lot of problems with this.
So what are the biggest problem, it seems like, is just the distance and the people have to travel? And
I think the biggest problem is the use of our emergency services. I think that there are many people who don't have access to transportation who will be calling an ambulance to take them to the closest hospital for birth. They still will show up at the emergency room in Hudson, where there are not obstetricians and midwives ready to take care of these people. So it's a real strain on the emergency services using ambulances as taxis. And then they may not be available for people who really have emergencies. Some people, especially people having their second or third baby, might have an incredibly fast labor. There are going to be way more births in cars and ambulances than there ever were if people have to travel. One of the biggest things that we do in the hospital is what's called triage, where women come to us either thinking they're in labor or have some kind of problem that needs to be evaluated, and we take care of them. We often send them home, but somebody has to do that. And if there's no labor and delivery, they're not going to be doing that either. So, you know, you can keep adding problem on problem. Most women want some sort of familiar face with them when they're giving birth. If they're going to get all their prenatal care in Hudson and Catskill by midwives and doctors, and then go to Albany or another hospital just to give birth, they're going to be with total strangers. And that lack of consistent care and that lack of personal relationship makes for not as satisfying a birth experience, I think.
And we should say, I guess some people are going to be going to Cobleskill if you're out in like Western Greene County and you might have gone to Columbia Memorial before or other parts, right?
Right. I don't even actually know of
the ripple
other
effects of all the hospitals that this might cause. And then another thing, I guess, is with people that want to do home births, the hospital is kind of their backup plan, right?
Right.
So this goes back to that emergency room situation. They're going to have more of those kind of situations.
Exactly. Exactly. But they don't have a midwife or obstetrician on call 24 hours a day who can take care of these people, which is what you do have on a labor and delivery unit.
So is there anything that can be done about this? I guess, you know, there's already politicians in Hudson talking to the hospital about trying to change the decision, but it's an economic decision that they're probably not going to change.
Right? I doubt if they're going to change this decision. I think, oddly enough, I can't understand this for anything in the world, but they have said they have a lot of trouble attracting obstetricians to the area. I think it's the most gorgeous place in the world to live. I can't imagine why they couldn't attract obstetricians here. They pay a good salary, and yet right now we have one obstetrician at Columbia Memorial Health. And obviously she can't be on call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
The doctor that delivered many babies for years and years here retired a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Dr.
Pearl.
Yeah, Dr. Yes. Pearl. He delivered our child. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, people are retiring. People don't want to come here. A lot of younger obstetricians want to go to a place where they're going to have more births than this average of one a day. It's a big problem just staffing the unit. I think CMH has made some mistakes, one of which is not having a full midwifery staff there. I think midwives are cheaper and just as competent as obstetricians in terms of prenatal care and birthing services. You absolutely have to have an obstetrician on call for problems that arise, but you don't need to have obstetricians on the unit 24 hours a day. They just need to be available. So not having a full midwifery complement, I think, is a big mistake they've made. Years and years ago, they made a huge mistake by not allowing a birthing center to take place in Catskill that was proposed. It would have put Catskill on the map. It would have been such a great solution in between home birth and hospital birth, and to be associated with Columbia Memorial Health would have been just a perfect solution. And Catskill said no to that. Catskill said no to that.
They didn't. It was proposed for the medical building, I'm guessing, or
it was proposed for a different site.
And so it was a site problem.
I wasn't around when this was proposed, but I know that it was proposed. They had a building available for it, and Catskill said no. And birthing centers are just, especially in rural areas, are a beautiful in-between solution to home birth and hospital birth. But women need providers. They need care. I mean, right now, I can quote some representatives who are proposing a new bill that America's maternity care is at a crisis level with high rates of maternal and infant mortality, preterm births, and a staggering lack of prenatal care for moms. This is a bill that's being presented called the Midwives for Moms Act, and hoping that will get passed and will start to address the growing maternity care provider shortage by establishing two new funding streams for midwifery education, especially putting resources in disadvantaged communities.
So is there Is there any facility in the area that could take on a birthing, or is there anybody that would could possibly create a birthing center or something akin to that here?
It could happen, certainly, but it demands a lot of political support and a lot of money and salaries for 24-hour care call.
So we're back to the financial problem.
We're back to the finances. I mean, if you look at, I mean, this is just a wild example, but say you just have 300 births a year, which Columbia Memorial Health is down to, and Medicaid is now paying maybe $2,000 for that entire nine-month period of prenatal care and birth services, you come out getting $600,000. Well, that could maybe pay for two OBs, but it's certainly not going to pay for six midwives and, say, three OBs that you might need for a full